Welcome to Open Minded Healing, where the topic is alternative health. We will be having conversations with the practitioners that offer a variety of alternative healing modalities, as well as everyday people who have recovered their health outside of the MD's office. Join us with an open mind for conversations that may provide solutions to healing your own body on a mental, physical, and spiritual level. I'm Marla Miller. Let's begin.
Welcome, everyone. Today, my guest is Jason Earl. Jason is a founder and CEO of the mold inspection company called 1-800-GOT-MOLD and the creator of the Got Mold test kit. The realization that his moldy childhood home was the underlying cause of his extreme allergies and asthma led him into the healthy home business in 2002, leaving behind a successful career on Wall Street. Over the last two decades, Jason has personally performed countless sick building investigations, solving many medical mysteries along the way, helping thousands of families recover their health and peace of mind. Welcome, Jason.
Hi, Marla. Thanks for having me.
Today, we're going to really get into the topic of mold. I know a lot of people suffer the ramifications of mold in their homes. I want to get into a whole number of things, like how people can figure out if they have mold in the first place. And then we'll get into all the chaos it can wreak on someone's health, and then where you step in to help people. So let's start with your story. How did you even get into the mold business? It doesn't seem like something, you know, you're little and you decide you want to be a fireman or a doctor or something like that. I haven't heard anyone say they want to be a mold expert. So I'm curious what drew you to this business.
It's a question that I get quite a bit, as you might imagine, because as you pointed out, there's no academic track. I don't think it's something that people aspire to become expert in. But like most of the people that I know that are in this space doing good work, they come from a place of personal experience. And, you know, you see this with people who suffer from or overcome any sort of ill. And, you know, you see this with people with addictions who then go to work in service of other people that are still sick and suffering. You see this with environmental illness like this. So I'm one of those. I got into this space, as you mentioned in your very generous introduction. I got into this space after already being a stockbroker for 9 years. And actually, I was on a mission to figure out what I really wanted to do when I grew up. Anyway, at the time, I had become disheartened with my place in society. It was money for money, and it didn't align with my higher self in any way. You know, the only people who really benefited from my success were the people who owned the stores where I shopped, you know. And yeah. My mom raised me to be service oriented. She was a nurse and she worked her tail off, but she was very much the person who was there in a crisis. And her goal was to improve the quality of other people's lives to her own detriment. Unfortunately, she was selfless to a fault. However, that aspect was really impressed upon me as a child, where I worked at the hospital as a volunteer where she worked, and also stuff we did on the weekends for our church groups and things like that. So anyway, I was very disheartened by the emptiness of Wall Street. And so I went backpacking right after September 11th, sold everything that I owned and put 20 pounds of stuff in a backpack, took a train from New York to LA, but through Canada, and then flew to Hawaii. And while I was there, I was reading a lot of the local newspapers. And there were a lot of articles about a huge mold problem that had been discovered in the big hotel on Waikiki Beach, the Kalia Tower. Oh. And it had been shut down for mold for a number of months at that point. And they basically realized that they were going to have to gut the whole thing. And it was like a $55 million mold problem on a $90 million new construction project. So it was really the story that caught my attention. Even though I was reading it from a business perspective, I was caught by one particular story of a gentleman who was in his 40s. And he had developed adult onset asthma, something I'd never even heard of before, as well as allergies and sensitivities to all these foods that he had normally consumed without any ill effect. And it was like a deja vu moment for me. I was suddenly reminded of my childhood issues and respiratory illness and all the concern and heartache that caused. So I called my father from a payphone, which probably isn't there anymore, and said, hey, do you think we had a mold problem at Old Trenton Road? And he just laughed at me. He goes, Jason, we had mushrooms in the basement. Of course we had mold. Why do you ask?
Whoa.
You know, no matter how many times I tell the story, I can't help but, you know, recall the sort of just blasé way. It was as if, well, of course, basements have mold. And that is the generational ignorance that was the pervasive sort of
feeling around
pervasively around mold in general. It's mold's been here for millions of years, you know, all that kind of stuff. Very dismissive. But for me, intuitively, it felt like there's something really big here. And I said, do you think it had something to do with my illness as a kid? And he goes, well, it couldn't have helped. But keep in mind that they smoked in the car. I was severely asthmatic. Yeah. And they would smoke in the car with the windows closed. And that's just the way it was in the 70s and 80s. That's just the way it was.
So what were you dealing with when you were a child growing up? What were the illnesses? So
at around 4 years old, I suddenly lost 30% of my body weight in 3 weeks and was having difficulty breathing. And so they took me to the pediatrician who said, you should take him to the hospital. And they brought me to Children's Hospital of Philadelphia, which is very well known for respiratory illnesses and specifically asthma and cystic fibrosis. And so they presented family history and the sick little boy. And their first diagnosis was cystic fibrosis, which was devastating to both of my parents, but particularly my father, who'd lost 4 of his cousins before the age of 14 to CF. So here I was, their only child, and they're seeing him potentially along that path. So 6 weeks later, they had a second opinion. And that second opinion was that I didn't have cystic fibrosis, evidenced by me sitting here at 46 years old.
Yeah.
But actually, I had asthma compounded by pneumonia, and which was my first big dose of antibiotics, which is another part of the health journey. And they tested me for allergies, and I was allergic to every single thing they tested me for, every single thing. So the short list is grass, wheat, corn, eggs, dogs, cats, cotton, so my clothes, my sheets, soybeans. We were surrounded by I was raised on a small sort of hobby farm, non-working farm, where we basically just took care of rescued animals. And so I was surrounded by all these things, cornfields and soybean fields and dogs and cats and, you know, you name it. So my childhood was itchy and wheezy.
Oh my gosh.
Until I was about 12.
I can't even imagine being allergic to that many things. I'm picturing we had a dog that had this allergy test done, and our dog was allergic to a lot of things, not as many as you're saying, and itched constantly. And her skin was so bad until they could properly address all of that. So as a child, I can't even imagine the irritation at the least, but the anguish you would feel on a daily basis being allergic to everything around you.
Yeah, it wasn't fun. But you know, it's funny. I have a very, I don't know if this is a coping mechanism or if it's some sort of a psychological blind spot, but I have very few memories of pain or discomfort. I know I was in pain and I know I was uncomfortable, but I can't get there. I don't go there. I can't access that, which is, I think, a huge advantage. But,
yeah.
You know, the knowledge and the memories of the facts surrounding that whole period of my life are indisputable. But I thankfully don't carry any sort of trauma from that, which a lot of people do. And a lot of people who have mold-related illness, skipping way ahead, and we'll come back to this, but, you know, mold can make you sick in lots of different ways. Allergenic, clearly, is one pathway. Toxigenic, there are toxins that are produced by molds that can send you for quite a trip down the immune system highway. But also inflammation. And then also there's a neurological component too, which some people refer to as psychosomatic, but it affects people psychiatrically and cognitively and affects brain function. There's lots of interesting research showing how these compounds affect people in very, very different ways. But the reality is a lot of it is actually sort of a neurological trauma. That's what you see. A lot of people just become viscerally, their body shuts down, or they get the huge inflammatory responses just by being exposed to the musty odor or the tiniest bit of something. It's a disproportionate reaction that has been proven to be able to be reduced dramatically with certain methods that are completely oriented around the nervous system. Anyway, the point is that there's lots of different ways, and I'm fortunate to have been able to, at 12 years old, moved out and all my symptoms went away, not immediately, but in fairly short order. And to this day, if you test me, I'm not allergic to anything that I was allergic to prior. Now, that being said, when I have mold exposures of significance, where I'm not taking proper precautions and things like that, I'll notice things that I'll get hives in certain areas, and I'll start to notice that I'll have other dermal reactions. But for the most part, it's all gone. And so I didn't think about that. I mean, when I was 12, my grandfather had grown out of his asthma, and that's basically what they thought about me. Then, you know, my mom passed away suddenly by her own hand when I was 14, and then I got Lyme disease when I was 15, and I missed a lot of school and also had a huge amount of antibiotics at that point. And then I went to go work on Wall Street. And the reason I bring this up is because a big part of the byproduct of all of this stuff was that I think a lot of my health issues had more to do with the treatments around some of these things rather than the actual exposure. So like the antibiotics, for example, created all sorts of chemical sensitivities and gas, all sorts of dysbiosis. So I ended up with a mold problem inside after I got rid of the mold problem outside. And that carried with me for a long time, where if I ate a bagel, I would have an out-of-body experience. It was like I was fermenting so much that I would actually almost be drunk from simple carbohydrates. It took a long time to get my mind around that or to overcome all that. But in any case, the way I got into the mold space was really because I put two and two together, and I became fascinated not with mold per se. In that moment when I was talking to my father on the payphone, the light bulb really was, I became fascinated with how the buildings we live and work in impact our health.
Well, and also how many people don't even correlate it with mold. They experience symptoms, but they just think it's life or aging or associate it with different things. And they have no idea that it's actually the building that they're in.
Yes. So, I mean, people establish a new baseline as they get older. They just chalk it up to being older or whatever. And you lower your standards, so to speak, because I think it's easier to deal with than taking ownership and taking action. Because that could cost money. There could be shame or denial all around that stuff. Mold is very difficult like that. It's something that everybody kind of knows you shouldn't have in your house. But if you start taking action on it, then you may have to take a lot more. It may be very costly. It could potentially, like I said, bring some questions about, hey, what have you been not taking care of? A lot of people get all twisted up emotionally. And so they don't take action on it. And mold does one thing. It grows. It gets worse. It doesn't get better. It never heals itself. It never goes away on its own. Even if you dry it out, you still have a mold problem. If you had one, you still have one that needs to be removed. And so people who deny and who ignore this are actually making their problem much, much worse. It's one of those things that you cannot sweep this under the rug. It'll eat your rug.
Oh my gosh, that's a visual you can't put out of your head. So I know that certain people seem to have the ability to walk into a room and they know if there's mold because they are so sensitive to it. But I'm sure there are just as many people that walk into a room and they're oblivious to it. They have no idea. So do you know what makes that difference between those two people?
That's a really good question. No one's ever asked me that. There are a bunch of different facets to that in my experience. First of all, women tend to have a much better sense when it comes to these things. And I found, by the way, we used to use mold sniffing dogs. That was how we made our name through 1-800-GOT-MOLD in the beginning. And we used them for about 12 years. And we only used females because they have a better sense of smell. They actually truly do. And we find this to be true in humans too. You know, mom can smell a dirty diaper across the room. Dads don't.
So it's not just dads ignoring it.
I'm here to attest that men do not smell those things until they're up close and personal. You know, it's just moms have that. They can smell. I think it's an evolutionary advantage. I think it's what's kept our species alive. To be able to smell food when it's spoiling quickly and not have to think about it. It's a visceral thing. Also, mold is the precursor. It's the beginning of decay. And anything that's decaying around us is repulsive. You smell rotting food. You smell feces, vomit. Anything that's in that process is a visceral repulsion. And so mold is just the beginning of that. And I think our nervous systems and our immune systems are tuned in. That when that smell is around to shut down because you don't want to breathe that stuff. Sinuses close up, respiratory airways constrict, whether you're dealing with an asthmatic or someone who's, right? You got all that stuff is designed to protect you, but we know the body can overprotect and then cause all these unintended consequences. So I think, first of all, there's the female aspect. I think there's the evolutionary aspect. And then I think also there is the hypervigilant immune system and nervous system that gets tuned up when this stuff happens. And can pick up these odors, according to the research I've been reading, below the odor threshold, which is fascinating. So in other words, they can pick it up before they can smell it, even though the most likely pathway is the sense of smell. It's being picked up by the nervous system below the odor threshold, so before they can smell it. And that's fascinating stuff, right? And I think that that communication is a gift because I think it's really important. When you have a mold problem in your house and that musty smell pops up, that is not a problem. That is the sign of a problem. It is a problem by itself, but that's mold sending you a message that there's an imbalance in your home and that you need to run towards and find the moisture problem, fix that moisture problem, and then clean up the mold. The people that are sensing that and reacting adversely to it, their body doesn't know that that's a benevolent message from mold. That's an alarm in your house. Instead of an audible alarm, it's an olfactory alarm. That's the way I look at this stuff. It's not mold doing harm to you. You're misinterpreting the message.
Yeah, that totally makes sense. And I was just thinking, I know of someone who I think may very well have a big mold issue in their home who doesn't seem to have noticed it. And then I have someone who has mold issues, but he's also had Lyme. And so I think his immune system is really, like you said, maybe kind of on high alert. So when your body is already out of balance and some things have already happened, say to your immune system, your body is extra protective. And so when he goes into a home, he's not smelling it. I think he just senses it. He knows that it's there. So that is kind of what you were talking about, I think, right?
Yeah. It's subconscious, but it's conscious. In other words, people feel like it's a sixth sense. And it kind of is. There's a trigeminal nerve. There's a nerve that runs down your face. And apparently that is super sensitive and picks up chemical threats. And it's a straight line right into your nervous system. And it's visceral. It's, like I said, a powerful thing that people can't explain. But my experience has been when they say that, they're right. Going into an assessment, I've had pregnant women on their hands and knees sniffing, saying, it's right here down the wall. Come here, get up. I believe you. And then we bring the dogs in and the dogs alert right in that spot. And of course, the whole place breaks out in laughter at that point because everyone thought she was crazy and she was dead right. We see that a lot. You know, the thing about Lyme disease and the thing about a lot of these biotoxin-based illnesses, there's this detoxification pathway issue that a lot of people have. MTHFR mutation, which apparently 25% or so of the population suffers from, where you have a hard time detoxifying from biotoxins and other toxins. And I find it fascinating. And it's something that people, I think, just don't latch into because the language is very specific. But people have to take a lot of antibiotics when they have Lyme disease. And people often forget that antibiotics are mycotoxins in most cases, in many cases. I mean, that's where they were originally developed. Penicillin is a mycotoxin. We take pills, dense with mycotoxins. And then we wonder why after treatments, we might have sensitivities to mold, right?
Yeah,
now,
that's
this, interesting. Which came first, the chicken or the egg? I don't know. But you start looking at this and you wonder, are the antibiotics, which are sometimes absolutely life-saving, causing additional sensitivities or amplifying sensitivities? Because these are powerful compounds. They're designed to be used microscopically. Yeah. Microscopically. These are one mold trying to kill the other mold. It's chemical warfare on a microscopic level. We take that, tune it up, and make factories where you produce tons of mycotoxins, put them in pills, and then hand them to people. Not hand them to people, funnel them into their mouth, right? I mean, it's just incredible. So I just think that the overlap, there's lots of reasons why, and there are some that are a little more obvious, but not as easy to see.
Yeah, that's interesting. Yeah, it makes sense. So I guess the first thing, you talked about using a dog to sniff out the mold. So you've changed that technique, right? Do you still bring along a dog with you?
Not anymore, mostly because, you know, 1-800-GOT-MOLD, we still do inspections, but we're really focused on the test kit business primarily, just due to the ability for us to scale up and have a greater impact and build more community around that and serve the underserved because of the price point. Our mold dogs were the heartbeat of the company for a long time. And I'm still a huge endorser of mold dogs. Anytime you've got a question about a hidden mold issue, go look for a mold dog. Go look for a mold dog in your area.
Where do you find a mold dog? That's interesting.
Google mold dog in your area, your zip code. There are not a lot of them, unfortunately. But you can also call the Florida Canine Academy. I think it's mold-dog.com. And that's Bill Wittstein, who's the sort of mold dog trainer extraordinaire who trained my dog and many others. But he trains dogs for everything. I mean, bombs, drugs, missing people, endangered species of snakes, and you name it. I mean, he can train a dog to find anything. But mold's easy because it's a static thing that's producing a chemical potpourri and it's not moving like, you know, bombs or drugs in a car. So mold's an easy target. And the dogs are incredibly effective. In fact, I will argue that I learn more from the mold dogs than they learn from me, for sure. I learn more about how buildings leak, where the defects occur. Because you see patterns. If you do thousands and thousands of these, eventually you figure it out. And certainly the perspective that I got from our four-legged mold detectives was incredibly insightful. So there are two kinds of mold problems. There's the kind that's sequestered in a wall that spores can't come through and the musty odor can come through. And then there's mold growth that's on surfaces inside of a living space where those spores can become airborne. Those are two very different kinds of mold problems, right? Because the one will have high spore counts, or presumably there will be symptoms of it in the air quality in terms of spore counts. Yeah. Our test kit measures that. the stuff that's in the wall where spores can't get through, that's trickier. And that really takes a skilled technician, a qualified inspector, ideally mold dog, or you can test for that using a test made by a company called Home Air Check. And that's looking for the mold and VOCs made by mold. So if you use our test kit, actually, the Got Mold test kit with that test kit from Home Air Check, you end up with a more holistic view of what's going on in the air because you're looking for the gases and the particles. And to hyper simplify air, you're basically dealing with gases and particles. And so when it comes to air pollution, we're testing for mold-related particles with a Got Mold test kit, and we're testing for mold-related VOCs and even man-made VOCs with the Home Air Check test kit. And then you have a more whole view on things because you can tend to find false negatives with one or the other. But when you have both, if you have a negative, very high likelihood that you don't have a serious problem.
Okay. Well, that's good to know about the two different kinds and how to address both of those with different test kits. So when I wasn't sure if I had mold in my home some years ago, I was told to get the ERMI kit, the E-R-M-I. So that was where you took a cloth and you took samples from three different places in the home and then mailed it in and got your results back. How does that compare to either of those two tests you just mentioned?
ERMI, it stands for Environmental Relative Moldiness Index. It's actually technically not a test. Even though it's sold as a test, it's actually an index. It's a way of interpreting data from a panel of molds that were identified during an EPA experiment or an EPA research project. So Steve Vesper with the EPA was trying to figure out based upon they were looking to see if they could identify whether their house was moldy or not using this tool called PCR. Everyone knows what PCR is now because it's the most common form of testing for COVID, where you can find very small amounts of organisms in a larger sample, and then you can amplify it. And so PCR has become big headline news. But back then, it was a new technology, and the EPA was embracing it on a research basis. And they found one particular area. They looked at 20 homes, took the molds that were in the moldy homes, and then they looked at houses that weren't deemed to be moldy and looked at the molds that they found in there. And it came up with a panel. It was a very limited study. 20 houses, okay, 20. And then they made an index off of that. And that's 20 houses in one geographic area. So it's even more, I mean, it's just like so tiny. But this ERMI is 36 molds. I think 26 are indicators and 10 are common background. Anyway, the bottom line is that you're supposed to initially have vacuumed up dust in your carpet, in your bedroom and your living room. That's called a compound sample, which has problems because you then don't know where the problem was. Big part of doing testing is to try to figure out where the problem is. And when you compound them and you combine them, you lose that very important aspect of investigative testing. So first of all, it used to be a vacuum and you'd put tape on a fixed area and you vacuum that area. And then it's changed to Swiffers now and you get lower and lower quality, but people love the PCR thing. Doctors love the PCR thing. It seems like good science, shiny, shiny, shiny science, but it's what we call junk science because it's good science being used inappropriately. And then you get this single numerical value. So it looks for these molds. By the way, if you hit one colony of Stachybotrys, it will tell you that your house is uninhabitable. The numbers just go almost always false positives too, because it doesn't take anything into consideration about the age or the light or the way the house is used. If it's an old house, it's going to have a lot of settled dust with a lot of mold spores. If it's a new house, it's going to have less settled dust with less spores. There's nothing in their algorithm to normalize that against the reality of that an older house is going to have more fungal spores in its dust, right? So this has been a problem for a long time because people love to use this and you get this one numerical value, which Dr. Schumacher, the former Dr. Schumacher, used to use as a way to say that the house was livable or not livable. But there is no test. I'm here to tell you as the creator of a test kit, there is no one test that tells you if your house is safe or not or what to do next. All these tests are designed to give you enough visibility to take the next step. It's not a replacement for a professional test. It can't be, because the professional will tell you how to take that information and put it to use. This idea that there's a binary, there's a good, bad, or safe, not safe from a test is a false narrative and dangerous too. And it's such that the EPA has actually posted on their website, Google EPA mold and ERMI, and you'll see that they tell people to use it. They developed it. They own the patent. They get paid, or they did up until recently because the patent since expired. But the point is that the EPA who developed it says don't use it for building diagnostics. And people keep using it anyway. So it's a really good question because people use it a lot and it's wildly flawed. It's prone to false positives. And it gives people the wrong idea that there is a test by itself that could be actionable and no such thing exists. Not yet, at least.
Well, I'm glad you clarified all of that. My test did come back very positive, high amounts of mold. And so I had a mold company come out that did the air. I can't remember the name of that kind of test. And they said, we don't see any evidence of a problem here. So then I dropped it after that.
We use aerosol cassettes, which is probably what he was saying. They use these round cassettes in the house when they were testing. These are the spore traps that we use with the gut mold test kit. So it's the most common professional mold testing methodology. And like I was saying, the thing about a mold inspection or a building inspection, it's a lot like a physical when you go to the doctor. If you go to the doctor and say, I'm not feeling well, test me. First, we need to know a little bit about what's going on. What are your symptoms? How long have you been feeling this way? Is there any time that you notice your symptoms change? This is what a mold inspection should entail. Asking these questions because you need to have more knowledge than just this binary thing, have it or not have it, sick, not sick. Because what's going to happen is the doctor's going to get this information from you about your history and your current situation. And he's going to then, or she's going to then tell you what kind of test you should take. Because there is no test for health, right? Just like there's no test for safe.
Yeah.
All right. So if it can't do a test for health for your body, what makes people think that something as complicated as a building is going to have a simple test for safe? It's not realistic. So what you have to do is you have to look at all the layers, almost like the peel, like an onion, right? Our job as a professional on the consulting side is to peel the layers of the onion away. Or another way to think about it is layering on data, because a negative doesn't negate the presence or the possibility of its presence. When it comes to assessments, you're only looking for positives, but you have to be careful with the positives because they sometimes can be false too. So you have to be looking at things and be willing to discard the useless data and then be able to evaluate and have the experience and the training to figure out what makes sense. And that's why there is no test kit that replaces a professional. However, there are ways for you to get closer to the point where you'd have the confidence to know that you're on the right track and hiring a professional is a good decision. And that's where the test kits can be useful, because the main thing is you don't ever jump from a test result right to remediation. That would be like jumping from a pregnancy test kit saying positive directly to like scheduling your labor, scheduling, you know, with the hospital, right? That's surgery, you know, remediation's like surgery. You've got to go through the process, which is do yourself test kits. If you're going to go that route, ideally find a qualified independent inspector in your area and then have that person guide you through the process of remediation, if in fact it's necessary. But if you have anybody recommending ERMI, run.
All right. So the first step would be getting your kit, say 1-800-GOT-MOLD, plus the other one you identified.
So 1-800-GOT-MOLD is our mold inspection business. We don't want to send people there. I mean, granted, if you feel like you need a professional inspection, we're more than glad to help you, even to help find a qualified professional in your area. But the GOT-MOLD test kit, which is at gotmold.com. And in fact, for your listeners, we created a special welcome page where they can go to gotmold.com/open-minded-healing. And they can take a look there. We also have an ebook. The first step would really be knowledge. Okay. The first step is really to do your own inspection. And so we created an ebook called How to Find Mold in Your Home. And it is something we get a lot of positive feedback on. It's about 45 pages of inspection checklists and things to look out for, as well as FAQs on what is and what isn't mold remediation, et cetera. There are also some additional resources in the back for how to find inspectors and remediators and things like that. So that's actually the first step, is to get a little bit of an education at gotmold.com/open-minded-healing.
Okay, great.
And also there, you'll see that there's a link to the test kit website, and there's a coupon code there for anybody who wants to purchase one. They can get 10% off with healing10.
That's fantastic.
That's healing number 10. Mold is something that's never going to go away. It was here before we were here, and it's going to be here after we're gone. It's one of those things that you should get accustomed to and learn how to navigate. I think it's a basic life skill. Unfortunately, generational ignorance has gotten us to the point where we misunderstand how it works. And so that book will help set that straight. And if you feel that you need to take the next step because you either see something, smell something, or feel something, that's what we always say. If you see something, smell something, or feel something, do something, that's when you might want to grab a test kit and collect some samples, invest a couple $100 and see if your gut feeling is right. I always say, trust your intuition, but get the data. Test, don't guess.
Perfect. Well, and I did use one of your test kits, and it was super easy to use. You just put the little cassette in, turn it on, like in maybe three spaces in the house. And then the results came back, very easy to read. So it's definitely a great place to start after the education.
Yeah, after the education. I encourage people to consider the fact that your building is an extension of your immune system. Buildings that you live and work in are extensions of your immune system. They are exoskins and exoskeletons. And it's one of the four basic human needs, right? You know, you got air, water, food, and shelter. And shelter and air are kind of two sides of the same coin. But we disproportionately, we focus so much on food, which is a big deal. And it can be the source of illness or the source of health. But you only do that a few times a day. And you can live without food for a very long time. Water, we're all more aware with every passing day that the quality of the water you drink is super important. But you can get away without drinking water for a while. But everyone who's curious about health is well aware that the water quality is important. Air is the thing that we do the most. And like most things that we're exposed to all the time, we take it for granted, right? Isn't that the law of familiarity? Whatever you get exposed to long enough, you take for granted. So can you think of anything that you're exposed to more than air?
No.
Or that you take for granted? You know, if you do the math, between 13 and 15 breaths a minute comes out to 1,000 times a day. You breathe 20,000 times a day. The only thing you do more than that is probably your heartbeats. But the reality is that in that 20,000 breaths, you're often rebreathing the same stuff over and over and over again. And that's the danger of indoor air quality, is that a small problem in your house is actually amplified by 20,000 exposures every day. And so that amounts to a huge exposure over time. And so that's the real issue when it comes to indoor air quality. But my philosophy around this is that the mold is not doing anything to harm us. It's just doing what it's supposed to do, which is bring stuff, turn it back into dirt, right? To take dead things and turn it back into dirt.
Yeah.
And it's doing that if it's doing it in your yard, but not if it's doing it in your living room or your basement. And so establishing a relationship with your building where you realize the building is here to protect you. It actually has a birthday and a death day. You could look at it as an organism, as a birthday and a death day. And the longevity of the building is determined by how well you care for it. The moment we're born, we're dying. It's the same thing with a building. And I often think that the building doesn't have an immune system, but then it does actually. You are the building's immune system. In fact, in many ways, we're like the mitochondria. We're the foreign DNA inside this building that's actually keeping stuff moving. But the building needs you as much as you need it. And there's a mutualism or a symbiosis, if you're willing to play with that idea. There's a relationship there that I encourage people to become more conscious of. Because when the building develops aches and pains, you want to be the solution and you want to get to it quickly. You got 24 to 48 hours after something gets wet before it becomes a mold risk, according to the EPA. And according to the industry standard, you've got 72 hours before something porous and absorptive that gets wet, gets moldy, or should be treated as such, even if it's not visibly moldy. So the guidance on this stuff is hours and days. Meanwhile, people treat these moisture problems in their houses as if it's no big deal. And it's very expensive to do that. Water damage is cheap to fix. Mold is very expensive. And so, you know, when you get that message, that musty smell, listen. And recognize that the building is sending you a message the same way your body does when it has pain, like inflammation. It's inflammation for the building, and you're getting that message. And then if you don't deal with it, you end up with chronic inflammation, which we all know it's its own disease. I could go on and on about just becoming more aware of what's going on in the building, because by doing that, when the building heals, so do the people inside the building. When the building is sick, so are the people. So
what are some of the conditions you've seen the mold affect when it comes to someone's health? And even talk about the different neurological symptoms or diseases, whatever you've seen.
I mean, I can't think of anything that it hasn't. One of the things that I think mold does is it brings out latent issues that you already have. For example, for me, I'm sure that if I were back in a moldy environment, I would be allergic to many of those things again. So, you know, the typical upper respiratory, you know, sinusitis, chronic sinusitis is actually the most prevalent long-term respiratory illness in America. And affects 37 million Americans. And according to the Mayo Clinic, it's mostly mold related. Most people who have sinusitis don't know that, but they should. Asthma is 24.6 million Americans, of which 4.6 million are mold and dampness related, according to EPA and Berkeley Labs. These are big numbers, you know?
Yeah.
Those are the obvious ones. Then you get into the less obvious ones. We have multiple chemical sensitivities or something that's now called TILT, where people become sensitive to fragrances and things like that. That's a common mold exposure issue. That's a byproduct of really chronic exposure. You also have all of the Lyme disease. It's the great mimicker. A lot of people end up with other diagnoses, and you see people with really interesting symptom profiles that once their environment gets straightened out, suddenly their symptoms go away. So the entire gamut, there's a psychiatric facility that has about 500 new patients a month, and they're considering prescribing our test kit to all of their new patients because they're finding inflammation in all of the cases of people who are coming in for non-relationship matters. And they are looking at the environment as a primary source of that inflammation. So if you can imagine how many different illnesses are showing up at a psychiatric intake, you can look at mold as a potential root cause, or at least an aggravating component of—
What would be an example of that?
Mold rage is actually a thing. Emotional dysregulation is really common. Cognitive impairment, brain fog, headaches, nausea, dizziness, fatigue, depression. My mom committed suicide, and she was also an alcoholic, but she lived in a very moldy house. The house I moved out of, she stayed. And over the years, medical research has honed in on some interesting stuff. Dr. Joan Bennett with Rutgers had her own house got flooded during Hurricane Katrina. She went down to investigate it. She wore an N95 respirator, which should have protected her from the mold spores, and did, but she got sick anyway because she got exposed to the musty odor. And she was so interested in the fact that she got sick, even though she was wearing a respirator, that she began studying this and started testing fruit flies that are genetically engineered to glow when they produce dopamine. And she tested these chemicals on fruit flies, and they stopped producing dopamine. They stopped reproducing. They began flying downwards instead of to the light. And they also developed what she called Parkinsonian-like symptoms. Those results have since been replicated by other researchers.
That's
just before
incredible.
That. Yeah, really incredible. And there was some stuff at Brown University too, where they looked at 6,000 homes, a really significant study. They found a direct correlation between mold and dampness indoors and depression. And these compounds can do some real harm. And at the very least, what they do is if it's not specific, they make you weak and it interrupts other normal processes. This is fungi does this on a benevolent basis in the forest under the floor. It's just not supposed to do that to your house and your system. And so it interrupts all these natural processes. And again, it makes you weak. And when you're weak, then opportunistic and latent issues have a chance to surface. And that's what I consistently see. So it's the entire gamut of symptoms that you can possibly imagine. If you have five people in a moldy house, they often have five different symptom profiles. One of them has the most symptom, but oftentimes there are people saying they feel fine. And then the mold gets corrected and suddenly the humble ones will say, you know what? Now I'm actually sleeping through the night. Now I'm not feeling so anxious. Now I'm not blowing my nose four times a day. Now I'm digesting properly. I had no idea that it was the mold. It's that diverse. It really is. I wish I could give you just a list, but it's the grand list of all symptoms, really. It just depends on who you are and what kind of baggage you bring.
Well, maybe we can end on a positive note. Have you seen people heal once they discover they have mold and they address it? Have you seen any success stories?
Tons and tons and tons. And so every single person has a different path. But what I can tell you is that in my own experience, my path was, first of all, eliminate exposure, right? So if you've got a mold problem, the best thing you can do is remediate it. Obviously, if you can't do that, then you should really get yourself some good air purifiers if you need to buy time. I happen to be a big fan of Medify air filters. They're the most affordable, high-quality filter that I've been able to find in recent years. And I don't get paid by them for that endorsement, but I'd be glad to. But I really do think that their stuff is great. I've got one right here next to my desk. But you need to first eliminate exposure or reduce exposure as much as you possibly can and take whatever actions you need to in order to do so. And then you also have to look at your diet in most cases. And a lot of people don't recognize that most mycotoxins are actually coming from food. So sugar and grains, anything processed, if you eliminate that stuff from your diet, first of all, it will make you healthier anyway. But it also is where you're getting a lot of mycotoxins. We actually import food with the highest mycotoxin levels, more so than most any other developed countries. We will accept sick food at our ports, whereas the EU won't. We really have a strange relationship with food here in America. But the bottom line is that oftentimes to truly heal, you have to remove all of those exposures. And you have to get to a diet where you're doing things that are less taxing overall on your immune system. And then doing things to accelerate the detoxification. You know, people talk about infrared saunas, any kind of sauna, exercise. You know, obviously mindfulness is super powerful because a lot of this can be neurological. I mean, your nervous system, hyper vigilant. And then I've also seen a lot of people have a lot of success with DNRS, which is a dynamic neural retraining system. Basically, it's controlled exposures to things that set you off. And then you observe your response, you know, to controlled adversity, if you will. And then you start to be able to respond instead of react. This is a less visceral thing. It's hard work, but I've seen tremendous healing from that.
And is that something they do themselves at home or in a doctor's office?
There's a course you can take, and they are doing them in person, I believe, now again. And my understanding is that you can do them online. Most people don't do well if they do them online because there's a tremendous amount of accountability that you get from being in a group because you have to do the work. You have to take like it's a couple hours a day if you do it right. And it's hard. It's hard doing that by yourself. It's hard, especially if you're dealing with mold-related illness where you're just tired and you're not thinking right and you just want to turn on the freaking TV, you know? That's what you're dealing with mold sickness. And by the way, watching that TV in the same room that's got a mold problem, probably, right? And it's hard to get up and do these things when you're in that state. So going away and building a tribe of people who are on that path with you, who you can lean on and who can lean on you, seems to be a very important factor.
Well, I'm so glad there's help for people that if they do find they have a mold issue, they can turn to the things you mentioned and start to heal, and that there is hope for a healthy future.
There is. And let me leave you with this. The thing about indoor air quality is that it's a relatively small investment to get it good, to get it right. And the dividends that get paid from that are huge and they're life-giving. Truly, you could extend your life by taking care of the thing that you do 20,000 times a day. It seems so common sense when you put it that way, right? But the penalties associated with not making that investment are just as plentiful. And so it's a true double-edged sword. I mean, it's one of those things where the investment has huge payoff and the lack of it has huge penalties. That's the thing to consider when you're looking at your budget, saying, should I buy air filters or should we go on vacation? Everyone knows what I'm thinking, right? Invest in your air. It will invest in you. Healthy air is a nutrient. Unhealthy air is a toxin. It's that binary. It really, truly is.
That's a very good point to put your money to the area that's going to bring you the most healing, the better life, the greater happiness. It's tough in the short term when you're trying to scrounge up money, maybe like you said, for an air filter or something like that. But in the long term, it'll get you building momentum toward the best life that you can have.
That's right. It's a virtuous circle. And the more you do that, the more you'll get the energy and the more energy you have. The whole thing is it's a long-term gratification, but I assure you that it's worth it. We don't have a lot of control over many things in our life. We really don't. We want to. We wish we did, but we are frustrated by that. And this is an area where you have so much control.
Yeah.
And I feel like if you don't take advantage of that right, then you're squandering an opportunity.
Yeah, perfectly said. So I want people to know where they can find you. Maybe you can restate your website or any resources that you want to put out there. And I'll also put them in the show notes.
Absolutely. Just to reiterate, gotmold.com/open-minded-healing is where you'll find the ebook and coupon code for the test kits. You can also just go to the homepage there at gotmold.com and scroll to the bottom. If you've got questions that you'd like to direct towards me, I see all of them. And so there's a little contact form there at the bottom. You can also, if you want, we're just starting this, or you can post questions to Facebook on our Facebook page, facebook.com/gotmold. And we're also just getting started on Instagram, also at gotmold. Those are the best ways to get in touch. And of course, you can always just do the simple thing, which is send an email to questions@gotmold.com. And I do see all of those.
Perfect. So I do want to say I'm very glad that you were someone at a young age that really tuned into your purpose and made a huge decision to leave a lucrative job on Wall Street. And maybe tell people real quick, you were how old when you started working at Wall Street? It's a very interesting fact.
16. I got my Series 7 when I was 17.
That's astounding. And also you were in the Guinness Book of World Records for being the youngest.
I didn't know it at the time, but that did make me the youngest licensed stockbroker in history. And there's a Guinness World Record on my wall here. Yeah, totally accidental. I was the least likely kid in my graduating class to end up on Wall Street, probably. I mean, I failed Algebra 1. It was just one of those fortuitous things. You know, I got recruited out of the gas station after I dropped out of high school. I mean, it was a fairy tale.
That's amazing. So you made a particular connection that led you in the direction of Wall Street and then actually made yourself successful there.
Yeah, that's I got recruited literally out of the gas station and he took me under his wing. Turns out he was managing director of a notorious firm, but the door opened and I took to it well. And then I did that for 9 years. The last 2 years I owned my own firm. So it was a good path for me, but it was a very fixed period of time. It served its purpose.
And it's a testament to how much you truly want to help people. that you would give up that career and throw yourself wholeheartedly into this career, helping people realize if they have mold or not, but also you want them to live a healthy life as well.
I do. You know, when one person heals, the whole world heals.
And that is a perfect note to end on. Thank you so much for being here, Jason.
Thank you for having me.
Be sure and follow Open Minded Healing so you'll get every new episode as soon as it's released each Tuesday. You can listen on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts.